Well, we are starting a brand new series here today, Answers to Life's Biggest Questions. And as we start this thing off, I just want to let you know, I know sometimes you may look up here and you'd be like, man, he's a pastor. He probably never has like doubts or difficult questions that he really, you know, is wrestling with in his faith. But I want you to know that that's just not true. You know what? If you come in here and you may, you know, have a set of things that you're like, I just don't, I have all these unsettled questions. I sometimes don't even know, does God really exist? And I want you to know that I've been there too. And I've had to wrestle through the exact same doubts that probably you're facing, the exact same difficult questions, because life brings those. If you're dealing with life, is that it brings up these moments where you're like, where is God, right? And am I really certain that he exists? You know, how can he be? You know, how can he be? You know, is he good and is he powerful if this is happening in our world? And I have wrestled with the same things as you. And maybe, you know, that like comforts you some to be like, whew, I'm not alone. And I want you to know, if you're coming in this room and you may think, oh, maybe I'm the only one that has this, everybody else here has this like incredible faith in God, I want you to know, yeah, you're not alone. This room is most likely filled with people who are still have challenges maybe in their faith, questions they have. Maybe they're dealing with doubts in their faith as well. And that's a natural part of just kind of being in a relationship with God, is to go through that. You think about this. I mean, you look at Jesus' disciples, even they had doubts and questions, and they spent every day with Jesus for like 3 years. So is it any, you know, for us, we don't have that kind of access to Jesus. And so it makes sense, right? Like we're going to have times when we're like, where is God? What is he up to in our lives? And I know I want to give you permission in this series to be able to kind of give voice to your doubts. Because I know a lot of times we're kind of afraid to. We don't know what, you know, like we're afraid of what they mean for us. One, you know, might be afraid, you know, to voice your doubts because you're like, what does this make me? Does it make me a bad Christian if I have doubts and difficult questions? Because, you know, good Christians, they just trust and they believe, right? That's how they are. And so you wonder, like, am I a bad Christian? And maybe sometimes even like, am I even a Christian if I'm having these questions about God? Or maybe for you, you've been afraid to voice maybe some of the doubts that are kind of rattling around in the back of your mind because you're like, if I do and I actually go down that path, what happens? What happens if I find like I there's like some legitimacy to my doubts? Like what happens to my faith? And you're scared about what that will mean down the road. And you're like, I don't even want to go there. And I can resonate with that too. There's some of that, you know, part of me too is like, oh man, I'm afraid sometimes to follow where these questions that I'm having would lead. But I want you to know that doubts and questions are actually a good and healthy part of following Jesus. You know, when we're honest with our doubts, when we address our difficult questions by seeking out truth, I believe what they do is they lead us to a stronger, more resilient faith. Because we understand, we've come to this place where like, yeah, I really do believe that there is a God. I really do trust that he's good and that he's powerful. And that's my hope as we go through today, as we go through this series, that we address some of the big questions that a lot of people have that maybe you are in here, you have, and it helps you be able to develop a stronger, more confident faith. Now, some of these questions, you know, as we hit them, maybe, you know, some of these questions may not be ones that you're asking right now in your life, but I think a series like this is still helpful because it equips you, and my desire is for that, it equips you to be able to answer these questions for others, because I am almost certain that there are people around you in your life that are asking some of these very same questions. And so today's question we want to tackle is this one, is science and reason more enlightened than faith? Is science and reason more enlightened than faith? And so this one's going to be one of those ones for those of you who like to kind of think deeply, the intellectual types. Today's your day, okay? We're going to get into the weeds of it some here together. But this may be one question you come into and you're like, I don't know if I have a good answer for that one. Or maybe it's been rattling around in your head and you've been asking that. Because I think when you get into our culture, when you consider our culture, you see that there's pretty much this pervasive idea, I think, now that we see is that Christianity is built on faith. And that is an antiquated way of making sense of the world now that we've seen the advancements in science and the reasoning that comes from those advancements is that we have this incredible wealth of understanding now of the cosmos that basically makes God unnecessary. And so by holding on to this belief in God is that you're really not being intellectually honest or objective about what we've seen and advanced in our culture. You know, this non-theistic worldview is centered on human agency, like what we can do as humans, and a reliance on science and reason rather than a revelation from a supernatural source for an understanding of the world, and it's called humanism. I know this is one of those big words, I know, but I want to be able to use it for the rest of the time because it summarizes this idea, right? God doesn't exist. Science and reason help us understand our world. They tell us what is true. And the rise of humanism has caused many Christians to wonder, man, am I being like naive holding on to this faith in God? Especially when there's like so many really smart, really well-educated people, particularly you think about it, and you go into like the colleges and universities in our country, it's like most of them are humanists. Like most of them have deleted God from the equation and believe this. And you're kind of wondering, well, like, am I kind of like holding back from moving forward with really understanding the world like I should? It can be kind of like, I liken it to this, is that, you know, like in our systems of measurement, we use feet, right? And originally it was like some guy's foot, right? That was like the basis of measurement. Now, if somebody came in and was like telling you, like, oh yeah, I'm replacing my kitchen cabinets. I measured out the space that we need. It's 15 feet. And you're like, oh, that's great. I'm glad, you know, it's good that it's 15 by 15 feet. You figured out your kitchen measurements. You got a tape measure out and you did that. And you're like, no, I didn't use a tape measure. It's 15 of these guys right here. And you'd be like, why are you measuring with your feet? Are you an idiot, right? Because we've moved beyond, we have a better standard of measurement. And so in some ways you might be thinking like, am I kind of like the guy measuring with his foot still by holding on to faith to be able to understand the world around me? And it's not just about where science has taken us and the understanding now we have, but it's also this idea, right? We struggle with it. Maybe you might struggle with, yeah, should I hold on to faith? Because faith gets challenged by some of the most profound evils and suffering that we see in our world. If it hasn't challenged you yet, it's going to, right? You're gonna encounter something where you're like, I do not understand how a good and powerful God exists in the face of this. That's a natural part of what it means to follow Jesus and encounter our world. And when you get to that place, or you look at our world and you're like, there's all these laws and things that govern how things work, is that I don't see an overt, you know, expression of God in any of this, like, to run things. And it's at this point, you know, like, I think we all know people who have walked away from their faith because of these arguments, right? They've walked away from their faith because they're like, I don't know if it makes intellectual sense for me to stay there. And usually the narrative goes, and in this storyline, when Christians walk away from their faith because of this, is that it casts non-belief as the result of this quest for truth and the acknowledgement that the religious, that the supernatural doesn't exist is kind of like an act of courage to finally get to that place. Because it implies that the non-believer has finally faced life as it really is and accepted it with objectivity that they previously could not, because of like maybe the religious environment in which they grew in or the religious pressures that they feel from those around them to not do that. And oftentimes those who deconvert from the faith feel like they are now a more accepting and gracious person because they've been able to abandon the worldview that sees that there's a God who has moral obligations for people to live by. And it's like a weight is lifted off their shoulder and now they can be able to, you know, truly, you know, care for people and be tolerant of them. But the reality is when you begin to look at humanism a little bit closer, and we're going to see that here today as we kind of get into it a bit more, is that humanism is not some sort of maturing process past faith. In fact, what's happening with humanists is that they're simply exchanging one faith narrative for another. Canadian philosopher Charles Taylor calls the deconversion narrative the subtraction story. And essentially what it is it's like Christians reaching a place where they're like, you know what, I no longer was convinced in the supernatural, so I took that out of my beliefs. And what I'm left with is what I now still believe. And then, you know, like that's the storyline, is that they've kind of moved towards a more tangible and objective form of understanding the world around them. But in actuality, what's happening is that they've simply transferred their faith to a new set of beliefs, and they've drawn the lines for right and wrong in different places. Now, when you look at the tenets of humanism, we're going to look at the two significant ones. When you look at the tenets of humanism, it really is actually a set of beliefs, not a set of facts. And we're going to see that here when we look at them. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at these tenets of faith that they have in humanism. We're going to compare it. We're going to see, you know, how do they stand up to what we experience and we see in the world that we live in? And do they answer best the questions about what we're going through? Or is Christianity, we're going to see that too, or is Christianity actually offer better answers? And so the first belief that humanists have is that truth and reality are found empirically. This is a core one, the starting point. Truth and reality are found empirically. I know I'm using some big words here, so we'll explain them. Empirical means something is verifiable by observation or experience rather than theory or pure logic. So in other words, you can see it, you can study it, you can test it, and then make a reasoned judgment based upon it. So for example, there's empirical evidence that ice freezes at 32 degrees Fahrenheit, right? You can test that theory. We see it happen all the time. We saw it happen this last week. You go to your fridge. You see it in effect in your fridge when you get ice cubes out of your freezer or whatever, when you put your cup underneath the ice dispenser. We've seen it. We've tested it. We've experienced it. And you know it's going to happen again and again. Water will freeze at 32 degrees Fahrenheit, right? Because it is empirically proven that that's what happened. So it makes sense to believe in that, right? And what humanists are claiming then is that about science is that it's the ultimate authority on what is real and factual, and that we should not believe anything is true unless we can prove it decisively using empirical evidence. In other words, you'll see this, is that the supernatural cannot be proven empirically. And so they're saying, and a lot of times it's phrased like this, like, I'll believe in God if you can show me, right? If you can show me he exists. And so the burden of proof is on us showing empirically, they can test, they can see that God is real. Now, I know this is going to sound appealing at a certain level, right? You're like, well, it makes sense. Like, that seems like a pretty sound way to understand truth is if you can, you know, test it and see it and experience it. Like, that seems like a pretty good way of understanding what is true. But if you play it out all the way, you begin to see that there are some problems that exist when you demand that you will not believe anything is true unless you can find empirical evidence for it. The first place that the problem shows up is with the statement itself, is that you cannot empirically prove that all things about reality and knowledge have to be empirically proven. You cannot prove that statement, because it's in the realm outside of what you can empirically prove. You can't go into the supernatural and say it does or does not exist. It's beyond the realm of what science can handle. So its statement itself is what? A faith claim. It's their faith claim, their starting point, of which they have to express faith that this is actually true. Now, for those of you who like to go down the rabbit hole of like philosophy, is that people who have played this out, this idea that everything has to be empirically proven, then they wrestle with this question. Can we know if the world around us and everything we experience is an illusion or not? And the maddening thing is that you cannot know that. You could, you know, this is the place that they've gone to. They're like, wait a minute. If we follow this out, we cannot be certain that anything that we know is actually really true and a representation of reality. Is that you're left with, when you play this out, not being able to know a single thing for sure, which is a problem when you live in a life where you don't know if anything is actually true or real. And so they have a problem. Tim Keller aptly states in his book, Making Sense of God, to state that there is no God or that there is a God then necessarily entails faith. And so the declaration that science is the only arbiter of truth is not itself a scientific finding. It is a belief. In short, no one can actually purge themselves of all faith assumptions and take a purely objective belief view, a belief-free view of the world. It's impossible to do. Whatever position you take, whether you believe there is no God or whether you believe there is a God, it's one that's made on the basis of faith. Now, once we understand that every position we take, every worldview we take is based upon faith, you realize that humanism cannot claim to be some sort of superior, advanced form of understanding the world. What it is another religion that has to be evaluated on how well it actually answers the questions about the world that we live in and the experiences that we have. Does it ring the most true? Therefore, it's just as reasonable for us to point to Genesis 1:1 as believers and say, this is the origin story, that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It's just as reasonable to be able to say that as for the humanists to say, well, things began, everything began somehow, in some way, coming from nothing. It's just as reasonable as they theorize that something had to come from nothing, and that there's a scientific explanation that will be made known for that. And so, we're both making reality and truth claims based upon faith. And the question is, which one makes the most sense for the world that we live in? I would argue that if you're going to get really down to it and where you're going to put your faith, to me, it actually makes more sense to believe that there is an eternal, self-existent God who created than to assume that something can come from nothing. The misconception among humanists is often that Christians are resistant to science and reason, and that we are protecting our faith by ignoring science, but that's just not true. The truth is that we're starting from a different set of presumptions about the world and interpret them through that lens, mainly that there is a God who exists and he is the creator. And that changes how you see everything in the world around us. In fact, Christians have really been at the forefront of all scientific and philosophy and reason, throughout the ages because of what we believe about how everything began, that there is a rational God behind everything who put a design into everything. And so we expect to find in our world design, right? From a designer. You know, while science and reason provide us with valuable means to determine reality and truth, the humanists are right on that front, is that they are not exclusive tools, though, for gaining understanding, is that reasoned faith is also essential to knowledge and wisdom. As Solomon, who is considered to be the wisest man who ever lived, not just by his own people, but also in the entire world at the time, would come and visit him because of his great wisdom and understanding of everything. He wrote this in Proverbs 9:10. He says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." What did the man who had, had thought deeply about all things come to the conclusion? He comes to the conclusion that there has to be a God, not just any God, but the God who was revealed to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to Moses, the God who goes by the name Yahweh, the God that we see in our scriptures, is that this is the God who existed, and to believe in him is the beginning of wisdom. It's the knowledge. It's the beginning point of knowledge. To understand anything about our world, you have to believe in this. Is that what Solomon was advocating for is not just a purely scientific and reasoned understanding of the world, but to understand that faith is an essential part of understanding the world in which we live. And so, what we've seen is humanists claim that all reality and truth must be empirically proven, but yet that has problems, and that Christianity provides a more coherent set of answers as to how we know truth and reality. That would be my argument. The second core belief of humanism is that humanity has an inherent morality. So humanists believe that morality logic flows logically from a thoughtful consideration of the kind of people we want to be, plus also weighing the consequences of our actions, that we come to our agreed upon morality or our moral code. They live by the golden rule that treat others as you would like to be treated yourself, and they advocate for human rights, free speech, progressive policies for achieving equality, justice, and personal freedoms. We see this it's throughout our entire country. We see this from humanists. And so, you know, if you're a person and you're wrestling with your faith in the existence of God, humanism does offer like a comforting home to move to, because you're like, I get to keep this sense of like moral obligation that I still feel that I have, while being able to delete my belief in the supernatural. In other words, you can be a good person without believing in God. The problem, though, is that when you state that there is a purely materialistic world and also try to claim that there's a moral code, is that those two don't make sense together. I mean, think about it for a moment. If you are made strictly of matter and there you do not have any special purpose, there is no afterlife, is that your life is come together by random chance, and that all of humanity at some point will likely cease to exist when the sun ceases to function properly. In light of all of that, like, where do you come up with the idea that there's a moral code that is binding for all people? You cannot. In fact, what makes the most sense is survival of the fittest, right? In fact, the strong should probably eat the weak, is what we should come to the conclusion in this matter. And yet, that's not what people say, right? No one wants to abandon all claims to morality. Nobody does, right? Everybody has built inside of them, even the humanists, this deep kind of like, this deep belief that there is something right and there is something wrong for us. And there is a good way and a wrong way to treat other people. But where is that coming from? It does not come logically from the foundation of beliefs that everything in this world is material and has happened by chance. You know, everything that we believe about morality, even those who do not believe in Christianity, makes the most sense when there's something transcendent beyond us, when there is a God. In fact, if you want to really look at humanism, it seems like pretty much what they've done is just borrowed their morality from Judeo-Christian teachings on morality. That's essentially what they've done. You know, Jesus, who is the Son of God, declared to his disciples in John 14:6. Many of you know this passage by heart. Jesus answered, "I am the way, the truth, and the life," right? No one can come to the Father except through me. It's a powerful, like, true statement that Jesus is making about himself, isn't it? He says, "I am the way, I am what? The truth." Like, truth originates from me. You want to know what is actual about reality? It comes from me and from as the Son of God. Like, I am eternal, and the standard of truth flows out of who I am. And it's binding because Jesus is part of who God is. Like, because he's eternal and existent and greater than us, it's a moral code that is over all humanity. And the reason we have it embedded in us is that we're created in the image of God, right? We're created in his image to be a reflection of who he is, to reflect back righteousness, doing what is right. So it's buried inside of each one of us in our makeup. And that's why we have this draw towards a sense of right and wrong. It's placed there by God. You know, Christianity provides a far more compelling and logical case for the innate pull towards loving other people and advocating for human dignity and rights and justice and equality and freedom. It makes far more sense from Christianity than it does from humanism. You know, beyond these couple of contestable core beliefs that humanists have, humanism also fails on the front of being able to provide people with a meaningful and satisfying life. There's missing critical pieces that when you really kind of get into humanism for providing that for us. First, humanism cannot explain the intuitive sense among humanity that there is something transcendent, that there's something out there beyond us. But yet, it seems to be a universal thing that people of all types, countries, time periods have this sense that there is something beyond them that is greater than them. David in Psalm 19:1-4 writes this. He says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. And yet, what? Their voices go out into all the earth, their words to the ends of the world." You know what? There's something profound, isn't there, about being able to stare up into the sky at night and you see the stars, and there's a sense in that moment, right, that you're small and that the universe is vast and big and that there's something bigger and greater than you out there. That's true now. It's been true for centuries, since the beginning of time for humanity. And we not only recognize that the transcendent, but we also have this longing to be able to reach out and touch it, experience it, connect with it in some way. Solomon wrote about his pursuit of wisdom, knowledge, and understanding in the book of Ecclesiastes. And he inked this powerful insight in chapter 3, verse 11. He says, "He," speaking about God, "has also set eternity in the human heart." I think it's something that can resonate with all of us, is that there's this sense, there's this desire to be able to connect to something infinite, right? And eternal, that's beyond us. Like it's inside of us, it's inside of our hearts, is that we want it to understand eternal things and be connected to it. And it makes sense in light of Christianity that that is true, because God created us for a relationship with him. It's built into us that we long to be able to be connected to this transcendent God who is greater than us. And Solomon ends verse 11 by saying, "Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end." In other words, it's a knowledge too vast and great for us, and we can't fully comprehend it. And there's a humility that we should have in recognizing our finiteness in light of that. But as we're saying here, as Christianity tells us why we have that and why we desire that, humanism can provide no answers for it. It makes no sense in a materialistic world why we have that drive. But we do. And second, humanism cannot provide for humanity meaning and purpose. The storyline is that there is no meaning and purpose to our lives. It's random chance. A young neurosurgeon named Paul Kalanithi wrote a book called When Breath Becomes Air. It's a book of his journey back to faith from being an atheist, and it's written while he was dying of cancer. And his primary charge he shares that he had against Christianity during his life was that it's failure on empirical grounds. He says, "Surely enlightened reason offered a more coherent cosmos, a material conception of reality, and ultimately scientific worldview." That's the things we just talked about, right? But as he faced his mortality and he thought deeply about life, he began to see that there was problems with this view of the world. He wrote, "If everything has to have a scientific explanation and proof, then this is to banish not only God from the world, but also love, hate, meaning." He says, "That is self-evidently not the world we live in." It's not, right? It's not self-evidently the world we live in. We sense that there is meaning, that we do experience love. And these are things that we experience in life that humanism can provide no good answers for. At the end, Paul writes that he not only came to a belief in God, but he says the central values of Christianity, sacrifice, redemption, forgiveness, because I found them so compelling. You know, Christianity provides a compelling answer to where life is found. And it's through a reconciled relationship with God. John 10:10 records these words of Jesus, "I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." Why did Jesus come? It was to die on a cross, to make payment for the sins of humanity. And by doing so, what? To reconcile people back to God. That's why he came. And by doing so, we experience life, and life to the full, abundant life in some versions. What we're looking for as far as meaning and purpose for our lives is found ultimately through a connection, a relationship with our Creator and our God. And so, to answer the question succinctly that we've been wrestling with today, is science and reason more enlightened than faith? The simple answer is no. It's not. And not simply because we're people of faith and we're trying to protect our faith, but also because we're people of reason. And we can look at what humanism offers, we can look at Christianity, and we can say, no, there's better answers to be provided when I believe that there is a God. Because while humanism offers initially a compelling view of the world that seems to honestly embrace science and reason, but once you get underneath the hood, you begin to discover that there's problems with their tenets that they believe. And there are missing elements to really make one's life run well. As Christians, we're not afraid of science and reason. I hope that's one thing you know. Like, we don't hide from it. We welcome it. Because if God is really true, he will bear up underneath the weight of whatever we discover about our universe and about the cosmos that science reveals. It will, in fact, only reveal more and more that there's a design and that there's a creator behind it all. And our faith is going to be strengthened by it. And so we welcome it. We welcome what we can discover about the world. We welcome, you know, thinking deeply about our faith and wrestling with the tough questions, because we believe that in the end, the best answers for understanding the world in which we live and the lives in which we experience is Jesus Christ is real, that God is real, and the gospel is real. Bow your heads with me. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you. We thank you for just the honesty that you allow us to have, that we can ask tough questions, that we can go through doubt, that you understand us. And I pray that you would provide us answers as we seek the truth, that we would understand the things about you and about our life and about the world and the things that we cannot understand. There are things like that too, Lord. We understand that. That we would just simply be able to trust that you are a good God and a powerful God that is handling things far greater than what we could understand. We pray this in your name. Amen.